Hey there, welcome to Take Away with Sam Okus, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief here at NRN, and this is the show where I give you an all-access pass to the restaurant industry's most influential decision makers. This week, I'm talking with Kathy Niven. She is the CEO of North Carolina-based breakfast chain Biscuitville. This regional concept has about 70 locations across Virginia and the Carolinas. It's really planted its flag in high-quality breakfast items served from 6 a.m. through 2 p.m. only, and primarily via drive-thrus. Now, as somebody who has lived in North Carolina for the last 13 years, I can vouch that Biscuitville is borderline religion in some southern communities, and it's really developed an incredible and loyal fan base that it continues to grow today. Before I jump into that conversation, though, remember that there are many other ways you can engage with NRN's award-winning content. Not only can you subscribe to our monthly print edition and daily AM newsletter at nrn.com/subscribe, but you can also subscribe to NRN's other podcast, Extra Serving, where our editors discuss the hot button issues of the day and we share interviews with a wide variety of restaurant personalities. On this week's episode, I join our editors Holly Petrie and Joanna Fantozzi for a conversation on the week's headlines. Plus, Joanna talks with Wiener Schnitzel CEO J.R. Gallardi about his new role as CEO, his goals for the business, and what it's like to helm a family-run restaurant chain. By the way, you can also watch our podcast intros over at NRN's YouTube page. Our team is excited to be rolling out more and more videos on YouTube, including deep dives into several of the concepts on our recent Breakout Brands report, as well as a monthly tech tracker video where Joanna explains all the tech news that you need to know. I highly recommend you head to our YouTube page for those videos plus many others, and be sure to subscribe for the exciting videos that we have not only in the archive, but also many that we have on deck for the rest of 2022. Jumping now into my interview with Biscuitville CEO Kathy Niven, and don't forget to stick around after the interview as I will share my five takeaways from this discussion, actionable insights that you can take with you on the go. All right, Kathy Niven, CEO of Biscuitville, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. Kathy, I am in the South. I'm not too far from you right now. I am very familiar with the Biscuitville business and a very happy customer at the Biscuitville business. But for those who are around the country and are not familiar with this brand, what's the story of Biscuitville?
Sure, and thanks for having me, Sam. Biscuitville is turning 55, and we are locally owned by a family out of Greensboro, North Carolina. We now have 71 locations, and we're a one-day part brand. So we're breakfast only. We open at 6 and close at 2. And right now, we're really in North Carolina and Virginia looking to grow more regionally, as we'll talk about more today together.
Sure. So around these parts, biscuits are everything, chicken biscuits and otherwise. Of course, Biscuitville really planted its flag in this day part, as you mentioned. Now, tell me about the potential of the breakfast day part. Because, you know, other brands, of course, you probably follow along and see all the other major brands talk about breakfast as this big thing. Why does breakfast work so well for a brand like Biscuitville?
You know, it's interesting. I think it has a lot more to do with our positioning than it really does just being in the day part itself. We have really focused, and the family really started this way with their founder, Maurice Jennings, back in the late 60s, early 70s. And he was super committed to quality. So local ingredients, which I'm sure we'll talk about more today, but, you know, high quality food, high quality service. And I think that commitment that has really never wavered is what really put us in the position we're in today. So I think the day part is growing for obvious reasons, but I think being in the day part and differentiating ourselves with some of those higher quality aspects are what has separated us, not only in the past, but as we're, you know, growing and moving forward.
Sure. You know, 2 years ago, when the pandemic first started, it was interesting because one of the very first victims we all said of the pandemic would be the breakfast day part, because here we were all talking about working from home, the commute is gone, people right. aren't going to get breakfast out anymore. You know, famously, everybody watched as Wendy's launched this breakfast platform a week before, and then, you know, in comes the pandemic. What was Biscuitville's experience? Did you see that happen? I mean, you're a very drive-through oriented brand. So did you have any bit of a blip at all?
You know, it was really interesting because, like everybody, we didn't know what to expect because it seemed like everything had been flipped. And there just wasn't precedent for anything we were dealing with. So we had the exact same concerns that you had and just went into it sort of saying, okay, well, let's not pay too much attention to what might happen. And let's just do this day-to-day thing until we can get back on our feet again. But interestingly enough, we had just implemented our risk and safety process just before COVID hit. So we sort of had that muscle memory in place. So as soon as North Carolina announced that they were closing dining rooms, we were working basically that very same day getting ready. So having a drive-through was a godsend. I mean, we were just so fortunate to have had that. A lot of our friends and peers in the industry did not have that available and suffered from that. But we really immediately engaged in optimizing our drive-throughs. And we started ordering new tablets and installing internet and just making sure that for whatever was going to come, we were going to be prepared for it. But what ultimately happened is we all but made up for the lack of dining room, with the exception about, I'd say, 10% when things started to stabilize. So drive-through really was a change maker for us in our industry.
And talking about optimizing drive-through, I have to imagine then that benefits the brand going forward, because now you've gotten so much better at drive-through. Tell me about how the drive-through component, how you've continued to optimize that, and how that's become sort of an advantage for you going forward.
We learned so much. It would be impossible to even discuss it all. But I think the key takeaways were we were making a lot of assumptions prior to the pandemic. And they turned out to be some wrong assumptions. And one of those was that we just never believed we could fit the number of cars through our drive-through within the day the way that we actually could. So we'd never taken the time to do timing studies and capacity studies. And when we really were forced to, we started to realize that restaurants who were pushing 90 cars an hour through the drive-through, by the time we were halfway through the pandemic, we were running 150 cars through the same drive-through just by the right processes and making our wrap stations built for that sort of throughput and putting tablets outside. And so that was probably the biggest takeaway, is we were actually capping our own success just by not really paying the attention that it deserved. I think the second one was technology. We had just not engaged in it at the level we could or should have. So we're installing our brand new POS system with CBS North Star at the end of this fiscal year. And that will give us all new technology in the restaurants, including brand new tablets where you actually pay in the drive-thru on the tablet. And it has obviously touchless pay. So we're really excited about that. And then really lastly, it was how our kitchens are set up. So as we're building new restaurants, we're really designing those kitchens to cater more toward throughput and speed than dining room. Those are probably the three biggest that I think, as you said, will make an impact for the future as well.
Yeah. The digital element of this, let's unpack that a little bit more, because, you know, so many brands were sort of thrust into adapting digitally early in the pandemic, but, you know, the last 2 years have been really fascinating to watch a lot of these doors be opened up to brands as far as the digital channels go, whether that's digital ordering, you know, whether that's some getting into virtual brands and things like that. What, when you think about Biscuitville, I mean, here's a brand that I think is so sort of steeped in Southern community. It's not necessarily the one where I need all these bells and whistles, digitally speaking. So how do you adapt digitally to a point that fits for the Biscuitville brand without going too much off brand, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. And one of the things you probably know is when the pandemic hit, we were in the process of starting to interview companies, and our RFP had just hit the market for the new POS system. So we were really behind. And so our old POS system really limited our ability to move forward technologically with things like off-premise and online ordering and all the really cool things that other brands were ahead of us and they were able to do. So I don't know if that was a blessing and a curse. It certainly kept us from being able to engage at the level that a lot of people were with things like online ordering and off-premise. But what what it did allow us to do is we didn't have technology as a distraction because it wasn't available to us. So we really doubled down on customer experience and food quality and drive-through experience and throughput efficiencies without the use of technology. And I think we gleaned a lot of things from that that we might have been sidetracked if we had doubled down on technology and just gone in that direction. But it certainly put us, behind. And so we're really looking forward to this new technology and think we can take what we learned about fundamentals and restaurant design and how we deploy our resources and make it even better. But to answer your question directly, is we have always said that we really don't want to engage in technology for technology's sake. We want to use technology and work with technology partners that can help us meet the consumer and our guests where they want to be, right? I think a lot of brands have technology that just isn't really built for the consumer. And so we'll be in sort of looking at that in 2023 beyond just the point of sale system and the things that will afford. What more could we do with that? We're going to try to let the guest be involved in that decision-making.
Well, and the last 2 years have been kind of an equalizer in terms of digital ordering was more the realm of younger customers, whereas these days it's everybody because everybody's been doing all their experiences by their phone, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, I can speak for that. We're, you know, my husband and I are in our 50s, and I think the pandemic forced us to engage in technologies that we might not have preferred before. So we just really didn't even engage in them. And so I think once a lot of those folks were like, wow, this isn't so bad. It'll kill you to use your app. We all realized how incredibly convenient it could be. So it's been a huge shift in the way people use technology and engage in restaurants in general.
The term convenient, you know, I want to talk about that because you mentioned that earlier, you know, how much convenience is a part of the Biscuitville brand. And of course, across the QSR space, generally, convenience has always been king. But you also mentioned quality and, you know, local sourcing and being able to provide a quality product. How do you find that balance of providing this incredibly high quality product with the convenience of putting 150 cars through a drive-through in an hour?
You know, it's interesting. It's probably harder since the pandemic than it's been in the last decade or two. And I say that because going into our 2014 rebranding, you know, as we started working on our positioning statement and who do we want to be when we grow up and what's our purpose, we really doubled down and defined ourselves by high quality ingredients and high quality processes in the kitchen. In other words, so many people par bake their proteins. And we don't do any of that. We cook bacon from scratch and sausage from scratch and country ham from scratch on a griddle the old fashioned way, our hand cracked eggs on a griddle. So that costs more because most of them are locally sourced or family coming from family owned companies. So that just puts greater margin pressure on us. And then making it from scratch, as you said, creates more barriers when it comes to throughput and the velocity we have to deal with under our cooking style, if you will. So it is, as we say to people who interview to run a Biscuitville restaurant, you might have been in fast food your whole life, but you will not experience the velocity and the complexity and the art it takes to run a Biscuitville because of exactly what you said. You are cooking things just like you're in a kitchen in someone's house. We have no microwaves. So we don't have that advantage. Everything's cooked the way you would in a kitchen at your home, plus the component of wanting to serve it to you in 90 seconds or less. So the culinary operations team and the field ops leadership just does an amazing job to sort of coordinate that dance so that it works and we don't have to compromise. So really for us right now, it's more about margin compression with the quality of products that we offer than the throughput piece.
All right, so margins kind of opens the door to talking about both supply chain and labor and inflation, of course, being a piece of all of this. Let's start with labor, because talking about that aspect of the complexities of running a Biscuitville kitchen, has that made the recent labor struggles harder for you, or have you found a way around this challenge in any way?
We have been really lucky. We had just implemented, well, let me back up and say this. you cannot run a restaurant without a great management team. And so one of the very first strategic initiatives we put in place is it doesn't matter how well you handle turnover and attrition at the crew level. If you don't have a stable management team, you're in really big trouble. So we had just recently, before COVID hit, implemented our new profit share program where operators can enjoy up to 20% of their profit based on their monthly performance. And so we agreed when COVID hit that we were not going to touch that program. So no matter what happened, we were committed to keeping that program alive. So that we really doubled down on that. The second thing we did was we increased the number of management in every restaurant. So instead of having one assistant manager, we went to two assistant managers. Instead of having two shift leaders, we really went to three or four shift leaders, believing that if we could have a strong management team through the pandemic, we could really handle most anything. So we really started out with making sure we were taking care of that management team. Mm-hmm. And then quickly after that, started putting programs in place like what we called gratitude pay, which was $2 an hour more average for the employees throughout the pandemic. So we had a lot of success, but it was tough. And we've experienced a 25% increase in our hourly wage in the field. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to mitigate that from a price increase perspective. So we're feeling this for sure.
Then supply chain being another element of this, where I know food costs have gone crazy, but thinking about how Biscuitville is sourcing product, has that maybe safeguarded you against some of that if you're buying locally, or have you experienced those same supply challenges?
Again, just so grateful for how we went into the pandemic. 90% of everything that goes out of our restaurant has at least one local ingredient. And a lot of those make up the lion's share of our food sales. So because of that, exactly like you said, like our flour broker, we've been with them for almost 45 years. It's a family-owned company in Henderson. And when everybody was struggling to get flour and a lot of our competitors were out of biscuits because they just couldn't get the core ingredients, you're exactly right. Those long-term relationships and those family partnerships were really a saving grace and still are. I mean, they still are. I mean, they do everything they can to be as reasonable as they can, not to pass on the cost that I think some vendors are.
Mm-hmm. So that just, you know, brings us into 2022, which is, of course, here you've dealt with pandemic, you've dealt with labor, dealing with supply chain, reassess where the business is at. You said you guys, you know, several years ago made that plan on where you want to be when you grow up, so to speak. And if you just look at it in 2022, what is the status of that and how close are you to where you wanted to be?
Very close. Interestingly enough, we really never missed a single objective during COVID except for top line sales. So we opened every restaurant we said we were going to open. We made the promotions we said we were going to make. So we really stayed committed to our process and our strategic priorities, knowing that this too shall end. Mm-hmm. And so we tried not to let the pressure of the pandemic get in the way of knowing that it will end and we'll come up out of it better, a better brand, a better people, a closer group, if we just stick to the priorities and don't shift. So probably the biggest thing right now with margin compression is also the cost of facilities. So a new restaurant right now is running anywhere between 20 and 20% more than it was when, you know, we were forecasting things like cash on cash returns. So right now we're just assuming that it'll get back to a more reasonable place in the next 12 to 18 months. We're certainly banking on that and trying to keep it business as usual, which is a term we use a lot around here. But there is a point where things just start to get so far out of alignment that you have to rethink the whole thing. And we're not there yet. The biggest thing I'd say we're doing is we really recognize the fat that we had in our GA. So we've really gone in and tried to prioritize what we're doing and tried to really cut out anything that didn't directly or immediately affect our short-term and long-term vision.
Okay. So thinking about long-term vision, I want to talk about growth and what that means to Biscuitville, because you mentioned earlier that growth being in Virginia and the Carolinas. Talk to me about that strategy. Do you foresee this brand having potential beyond that region, or do you see is there a real advantage to focusing that growth aspiration to this smaller region?
You know, I've said this since the day I came to Biscuit Village and started really digging into the research and the history and reading every single consumer research study they had done. I still to this day personally believe that the sky's the limit for the family and the brand. I really just don't think there's anything that would stop them from going as far as they wanted to nationally. But I don't think that is necessarily where the family would want to go. I think they have a lot of pride in the brand and they really want to see the service levels and the quality remain. And so our short-term vision, I would say through 2029, is really to stay in the Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, which we'll be opening in this end of this year, next year, looking at Tennessee, Georgia. So I think staying fairly close regionally here in the South is probably going to be the 5 to 10 year plan, but never say never, right?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, up north, there's sort of an identity for what a brand like Biscuitville is in that it's a Southern brand, but what you're serving is a universal product beloved by all Americans, even more so over the last decade.
Absolutely. I mean, North Carolina, as you can imagine, the population shift has been great in the last 10 years. A lot of people coming from the north, from the west. So it's become a really attractive state for people who are not necessarily from the south or the southeast. So it's always really interesting to see folks who have really not had an experience with a brand like a Biscuitville. Watching their first experience is always a lot of fun for us. We learn a lot.
Yeah, it's funny. Hey, transplants like myself, you come from the north into the south and ingratiate yourself into the traditions and brands of where you end up. Kathy, last question for you, talking about the balance of 2022 and what's to come. You know, tell me a little bit more about what you see coming around the bend for Biscuitville.
Yeah, it's funny. I will say most importantly, we're going to have fun. We work in cycles. So we tend to implement really taxing, resource heavy initiatives, and then we'll rest. And then we'll go through a stage of implementing super taxing and resource heavy initiatives, and then we'll rest. So we sort of have a tendency to do that. So we get really excited when we're at the end of one of those really big initiatives. So at the end of this year, we'll have completed most of our foundational investments that we have invested in over the last, let's say, 4 to 6 years to prepare for growth. So once we get our POS installed at the end of this fiscal year, I think we'll be able to really start to fully shift into growth and continuing to build our culture. So hopefully with POS and that successful implementation of that, we'll truly be focused solely on growth.
Sure. Well, it's exciting to see, and I'm excited to see what is to come for Biscuitville. So Kathy Niven, CEO of Biscuitville, thank you so much for taking time to chat today.
Thank you, Sam. Enjoyed it.